Everybody, good evening on this Thursday night. This is PM Lights Live. I'm Dawn, your host, and we are on the Uber Radio Network. Tonight, my special guest, I love this lady already, and I've only talked to her for a few minutes. It's Christy Peterson Schoonover. She has written so much cool stuff, fiction that's appeared in multiple publishments. Her most recent work is Skeletons in the Swimming Hole, Tales from Haunted Disney World, a collection of ghost stories set in Disney parks. Hey, Christy, you with me?
I'm totally here.
Hi, Hud.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good.
So glad to talk to you.
Yeah, me too, actually. We've been kind of conversing back and forth for a couple of days, and I'm like, I can't wait to talk to her. So now's our chance.
Yeah, I know. Well, anybody that knows me well enough knows I love Disney. So...
Yeah, no, I do too. I've been really into it. I was a child of the 70s. I was born 6 months before Disney World in Florida opened. So I've been a Disney kid pretty much my whole life.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
See, you and I got lots to talk about later.
Yes, we do. Are you more of a fan of the parks or the films or like
anything? I'm bad. It's anything. Doesn't matter. Anything. So when I saw this about you, I'm so curious. How did this all start with the stories?
Well, actually, this has been in my mind for a number of years. My father was an English teacher, and my mother was a musician. So I grew up in a very creative home. But one of the things they always did was take us to Disney World every year because my grandmother lived in Daytona Beach.
Okay.
So there you go. Every school vacation, we were in Daytona Beach. Every summer, I was in Daytona Beach, which is why actually Nathan, who really doesn't like the heat, is always kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe you like to live in Florida in August. I'm like, well, because I was always there in August. And all that said to me was the beach and Disney World and lots of cool pools, you know. So, but the way this got started was that my father read a lot of stories to me when I was young. Many of them probably too adult for a 5 or 6 year old. He was reading me Contents of the Dead Man's Pockets. He was reading me The Monkey's Paw, which was really the one that stuck most in my mind. Yeah, are you familiar with that story at all?
I am.
Yeah, it's all about be careful what you wish for in a pretty terrifying way. Yeah, so a six-year-old really didn't do too well with this. And of course, even today, I still pretty much sleep with the lights on sometimes, even though I love scary stories.
No doubt about it.
That's part of the fun. Oh my God, if I just put these covers over my head, the axe murderer will not be able to axe me through the cover.
That's right.
I'm still like that. Yeah, and I'm 40 and I'm still like that. But anyway,
yeah. I love it.
Kind of sad. Yeah. But anyway, what happened was we went to Disney World 1 year and my mother was not well. She had cancer. And
I'm
so
sorry.
Hey, it's all good. Our home life as children was a little difficult. It was kind of rough, but we always got to go to Disney World every year. And so Disney World was our escape. That was where we actually would go and be around other families that were laughing and having a good time and, you know, et cetera. And, well, this 1 year I was 9 and my brother Chuck, who was younger than me, there were 4 children, was 6. And we decided that we really wanted to go on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. So Dad was in a good mood that day, obviously. And my brother and I decided to go on this ride. And Mom and Dad said, well, go ahead, kids. We'll wait. And the lines were insane because this was early February.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for that ride. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is now no longer there. They've replaced it with Pooh, which I will refrain from comment on that.
Wow. They have both of them in Disneyland.
They do. They have both of them in Disneyland. Huh. But the one in Disney World, actually, it's my understanding that the Mr. Toad Wild Ride in Disney World had 2 tracks. The one in Disneyland, I think, still only has one.
Right.
I would honestly have to reconfirm that, and I would encourage any major Disney attraction fans to go on the internet and check, because there are several wonderful resources that will tell you that. But that was my understanding of it. So the one in Disney World was actually a lot more sophisticated. Of course, it was built much later.
Sure.
They could do different things. It was built, you know, 20-something odd years later. But we went on this ride, and, you know, it was a two-hour wait. And this was before cell phones. This was before, you know, we had all these kinds of things like texts and all of this. And so my brother and I were not allowed to separate. We knew that. So we're like, well, we either get out of this line and then we go tell them it's a two-hour wait and that it's going to be another 2 hours, or we just stick it out because they said they'd wait. So we decided to wait. We went on the ride. And I remember the two of us being very disappointed at the end because there was that whole hell scene.
Oh.
And Chuck just looked at me and went, well, that's kind of an anticlimactic, like, what was that? And I said, I don't know. But we were sort of disappointed with it, actually, at that age.
Right.
We came out, and my dad and my mother were just furious. Oh. And they were, like, standing there screaming in the middle of Fantasyland. And that's where I actually got the idea for these stories. And I said, you know what? Wherever you go, I hate to be cliche, but wherever you go, that's where you are. And we can't escape all of the upset at home. And we can't, you know, we were kids. We thought we were making the best decision.
Sure.
You know, and apparently we weren't. So then I remember we were on the monorail shortly after that, going back to the Polynesian, which was where we always stayed. And I thought to myself, there's stories in this somewhere. Because I was already writing at that age.
Wow.
I had already started writing short stories at like the age of 5. So I was like, there's a story in this somewhere. And I don't quite know what it means. But someday when I grow up, I'm going to write a story. Or a few of them set in Disney parks. And all about the fact that even though this is the happiest place on earth, it may only be a temporary illusion. Which is really kind of scary if you think a 9-year-old is already thinking that. But no, whatever. No. Yeah. So it's like a bad romance. But anyway, I tucked that away for a number of years, and I worked on my career, and I diverted from fiction for a number of years. I did a number of other things.
Uh-huh.
But then, like any writer, I came back to it, and I went for my master's degree, my MFA at Goddard, and I said, this is it. This is what I want to do. So that's how they came about, ghost stories. Because we're all haunted by something, and there's always that one thing we can never quite leave behind.
That's the truth, boy.
Yep. So what's your favorite ride in the parks?
Oh, that's a good question. I like to say that I have favorite rides within each land.
Yeah, me too.
Because I could never just pick one, because I've tried that before, and I went, no, wait, it's, no. So there's just no point. I can't answer that question with just one.
Yeah, I'd have to say, the Magic Kingdom is really difficult for me because I have several in those parks that I really love. Among them, Tom Sawyer Island. So, which is kind of strange, but it's not a favorite of most people, but I always really loved that book. So that's one of my favorites. Of course, we love the Haunted Mansion. We love pirates.
Have you heard of any of those stories about the Haunted Mansion and things that people have done there?
I actually have. I was on a website very recently, and if any of our listeners are specifically Haunted Mansion fans, there is a website out there called doombuggies.com,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, I knew you would have heard of it. You can even you can even write out your own death certificates and for whichever park you want. It's a lot of fun for Christmas presents, actually. But, yeah, they have a whole section on there, which is actual stories that various employees have reported over the years. There were a few really interesting ones that I had written down, such as there was one pair of employees, and again, go check doombuggies.com to get the actual details on this, because I read this several months ago. But there were a couple of employees who, you know, were shutting down the ride for the night, and they had definitely shut down all the switches. They made sure everything was shut off. And then they did their final walkthrough, and they basically heard, you know, one of the rooms was still running. And I want to say it was maybe the heartbeat room.
Wow.
And they were like, we shut off all those switches. And so they walked through the room, and sure enough, everything was on.
Mm-hmm.
And the uncanny thing about that was that that room and the ballroom, I think, like I said, go to doombuggies.com because I'm a little fuzzy on the details, are connected by the same switch. So if they shut off one, they would have had to have automatically shut off the other. And they couldn't figure out why it was on. There's also rumors of an old man who, or the spirit of an old man who mm-hmm. is in the queue, you know, comes through because it's an omni mover system. So it's a lot like the old system on If You Had Wings. I don't know. Do you remember that ride, If You Had Wings? It's Buzz Lightyear's spin now.
Yeah. Okay. Like,
yeah. Okay. But that's the same track that they used for If You Had Wings. It's the same shape track. That same system is what they used for the old If You Had Wings in Tomorrowland. I know they use that same system for Spaceship Earth mm-hmm. in Epcot. So basically, it's a big circle. So you load on one side, and they go all the way around, and then they come through like a darkened area that only the cast members see. They sort of go through a tunnel, and then the empty cars come out the other side. Well, they were having an issue for a while where there was this guy that they kept seeing coming out on the other side. And the one cast member would call the other, did you unload all the people in these cars? And he'd be like, yeah, I did. Why? And they're like, because what's this old guy doing here? And then he'd vanish. So there are some very interesting stories on there. So I would encourage everybody to go check that out. If you're a fan of the Haunted Mansion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there is also a story about a little boy ghost who's in Spaceship Earth. But I think some paranormal investigators had actually looked into that, and I think they pretty much said, well, there's a picture floating around on the internet, and they were pretty sure that it was faked, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
So, you never know. So are you a big reader?
I used to read. Actually, I had originally started out in college to be at anti-writing. It began with English, the college level English classes in college, and I excelled at creative writing, and I wrote a lot of stuff.
Wow.
Just kind of came to a halt at one point, and then I took a left into fashion, and here I am on radio.
Well, that's kind of the beauty, though. I think anybody who really writes, we sort of all go different paths, because that's part of the experience. You know, it's a little like art. You have to do 50, you know, like painting or something like that. Sometimes mm-hmm. you have to divert and go 50 million different ways so you can sort of find your voice, if that makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense. My stuff was just so doggone dark, it scared people.
mine too. But thankfully, in this era, in this decade, dark has come to the forefront, so let's have a festival.
Sing it, sister.
Yeah. Well, and it's very interesting, too, because, you know, the classic ghost stories have always been around for a number of years, obviously. You know, the earliest that we know of, I think, was Aristotle, that he was already starting to tell ghost stories. So that goes way, way back. And, of course, in Japan, ghost stories are just part of their natural culture and have been for thousands of years. And I do know that when the Disney Imagineers started working on the Haunted Mansion, they spent a long time, like many, many days, if not even months, reading the very classic ghost stories so that they could figure out which images they wanted mm-hmm. to put into the Haunted Mansion. So, you know, I think Disney has always come from a literary tradition anyway.
Oh, sure.
So with the Haunted Mansion, I mean, think about it. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride comes from Wind in the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Winnie the Pooh is A.A. Milne. Swiss Family Robinson, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. You know, the Uncle Splash Mountain comes from The Song of the South, The Tales of Uncle Remus. There were 8 of those books by Joel Chandler Harris. Jungle Book, mm-hmm. Rudyard Kipling. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I could Alice in Wonderland. There's, you know. So when they did the Haunted Mansion, they spent a lot of time figuring out which images were going to go in there from the classic ghost stories. So there's some really neat stuff in there. Like, for example, in the foyer, they have the changing portrait.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's from Picture of Dorian Gray. That's Oscar Wilde, you know, who was the master at the twist ending. In the load area, they have the Medusa, which is from Greek mythology. She was the most terrifying thing out there. The woman who turns into a cat, that's actually an allusion to H.G. Wells' Island of Dr. Moreau. I don't know if anybody out there is, I'm sure some of your listeners have read that, but there's a woman that, you know, he turns her into a cat. She's his beloved daughter. So there's a lot. I mean, I can go on and on. I could take you through the whole Haunted Mansion. It would take 4 hours because I actually did this as a project for college. But there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's allusions to the Body Snatcher. There's allusions to,
really?
You know, Mike Black. Yeah, the Body Snatcher. If you go through, you know, when you get into the graveyard and you descend toward the end, and there's the skinny gravedigger and the skinny dog.
The dog, yes.
Right. And he's quaking in his boots and the dog is barking. If you read Robert Louis Stevenson's The Body Snatcher, in the last very chilling scene of that short story, and I'm going to kind of protect it from spoilers. You can find it online for free. Just Google it because it is a classic. It's no longer under copyright. But there is an image of there in that story where in the last scene, the guy says, I hear a dog barking and I think I hear the gravedigger or something to that effect.
Wow.
That is a direct reference to that. And in my research, I did actually get proof that yes, that's the story they pulled it from. So it's fascinating. Like if you're a ghost story freak, Haunted Mansion is a field day. If you've read a lot of ghost stories, cause I'm still not done. I'll go down there and ride 30 times and go, oh yeah, I got to look up that and that and that. So
I know, right? There's one of the people in the chat room, my buddy Mel here, there's something out, I'm trying to find, okay, here we go. There's instances that people have left kids, left ashes on different rides throughout the park. Small World, the Pirates. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the most recent incident, it was really recent. It was like, I mean, recent in my context. It was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. There was a woman in Pirates of the Caribbean who threw the ashes. Some of them are urban legends. In other words, you know, people started the rumor and then, you know, like, for example, there's Tim Yancey, Encounters Radio. You've heard of him, right?
Sure.
He did a wonderful piece on some urban legends surrounding Disney's Haunted Mansion a few years ago. I want to say he did it in 2005. It was a wonderful piece. I actually have a recording of it, Dawn, so if you want me to email it to you via MP3 to listen to, I'd be happy to do that.
That would be cool. Thank you.
Yeah, because he sent it to me. But one of the stories in there was the little boy that they see kind of cycling through the Haunted Mansion, which is so interesting about that particular urban legend because years later, it kind of disappeared for a while. Then years later, it popped back up as, oh, it's now it's on Spaceship Earth.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? So they kind of yeah, that's the beauty of urban legends. They're so fascinating and they're just so interesting. And they all come from our core experience of loss and grief and horror. That's mostly where they come from. But that the rumor was that this woman had spread her ashes, her son's ashes in the Haunted Mansion. And so now there was the ghost of this little boy. Well, over the years, it's sort of been transposed to various different rides. Is there any actual proof of that? No. However, there are cast members who have gone online anonymously and said, yeah, we have had that happen to us. There have been people who have wanted to. I'm working on a new book called Mourning After, which is about a professional mourner. And she actually has this whole scene, which was inspired by that article that I read about the woman spreading in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Really?
The person that, yep. And there's a whole thing where she's in Disney World, and in order to cure herself of this curse, she has to go spread ashes, and then, of course, Disney World catches her, and, you know, whatever. I don't know if I'll ever finish the book, but...
Well, talk about teasing me, girl.
We'll see. The draft is done. It's just, right. I have a complete draft. It's about 8,000 words, but honestly, it's a mess. It's going to need 2 years to clean up.
Oh.
So, we'll see.
Maybe I understand.
Maybe I can get it done faster. Yeah. So, to answer his question, I do think it went on at one point, because in any legend, you're going to run into some grain of truth. So, yeah, I do believe it. Absolutely.
Crazy stuff. People do.
Yep. Well, I mean, I'm okay with, you know, maybe if you have like a pinch of ashes and, you know, you want to go put them in the contemporary rose garden or something like that. And it's like a pinch.
Yeah.
You know, I've got no problem with that. But dumping them on rides, I can't even imagine also the kind of junk that they have to clean up sometimes.
Yeah. Not so much.
Yeah, not so much. And I remember, you know, I'm a smoker. I remember when you could smoke walking through Disney World.
Yep. Not anymore.
You could get on rides and smoke. I mean, they wouldn't let you on the rides, but
sure.
There'd be butts all over the queue, you know. It was like, hey.
Yeah, they have assigned spots for smoking now.
Which are actually really nice. And what's interesting is Nathan and I pretty much go every year when we can. And there's always a lot of non-smokers sitting in the smoking area.
Oh, yeah.
Which I always find interesting, because I'm like, what are you doing here?
In Disneyland, they don't make a big issue of it. It's just something that's kind of posted small. But it's an area that's been there for quite a while, so it hasn't really been changed, except where they've added the ashtrays. How many of these have you done to the skeletons?
The books or the actual stories?
Either.
Okay, well, I think there's... God, I can't remember if it's my own book. But there's like 6 stories in skeletons.
Okay.
I have 15 more that are drafted already for future books.
Wow.
Yep, which means they're written as drafts.
Uh-huh.
But they need a lot of work.
Okay.
And I take the editing very seriously and the revisions very seriously.
Of course.
And in some cases, you know, I have very dear friends of mine who are wonderful writers, among them Daniel Perlman at the University of Rhode Island, who's a really well-known science fiction writer. He's an Ezra Pound scholar. You know, I'm very fortunate that I'm surrounded by a lot of people who really spend time on my work. And so that's why it takes a while. But I have 15 that are literally laying in drawers that I've got to... I'm already working on 2 of them right now to revise. Then I have ideas for... Oh, my God. I don't even know how many more. Because Disney's endless.
It is.
You can hit every resort, every park. You can hit their additional programs. Like, I just watched Disney's Oceans last night. You know, they have their Echo programs going on where they, you know, the donations that they collect from their Disney Nature series.
Right.
They, like, go restore a rainforest, or they, you know, they take a portion of the proceeds and they donate it to conservation efforts. That's appropriate, of course, for the film that they release. And that's what they were always great at, was theming.
Sure.
You know? But, yeah. I mean, there's just loads of opportunities. There's cruise ships. I mean, I could write forever. Never be done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The second collection is called Hairless Girl Does the Hula. That obviously takes place at Disney's Polynesian Resort, which used to be called the Polynesian Village.
Mm-hmm.
The original release date was 2012, but I'm moving a little more slowly on those stories, so I'm thinking more like 2013 for that set. But I want to do a few more stories than just the 6 or 7 that are in the original book. I want to, you know, do more, like make it 10 or 12.
Cool.
And I think that's worth the wait.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's worth the wait. So we'll see.
Wow. Talk about someone getting inspired by Disney. How cool.
Yeah. Oh, so what short story would you like to see? What's your favorite setting? That'll give me a challenge. Where would you like to see me set a short story?
That's a good question. I always wondered how it would be for two different places. Gonna sound kind of corny, but the Peter Pan ride.
Ooh, okay, cool.
Just above that setting where you're supposed to be flying all the city with the lights.
That's a
That.
great, yeah. That's great. Okay, I'm writing this down as you're talking. Okay, go ahead.
That part inspires me. And then there's an area in the Pirates of the Caribbean where you're going under a sort of a bridge. And they removed him, I think, but there used to be a guy on top swinging his feet with some little pigs around him.
Okay, the guy with the hairy legs.
Yes.
He's still there. And the guy with the pigs is still there, but I think they moved the guy to the pigs to a different scene. But they're both still there in Disney World, as far as I know, because I was there just a year ago. So they're still there as of right now. But the guy with the hairy leg, yeah, he's got a story to tell.
Yeah, he does. Why the vision that I got was from being in Disneyland. I haven't been to Disney World since I was, oh boy, I was in junior high, so that was a long time ago.
Well, the neat thing about Disneyland, of course, is that you have that wonderful Blue Bayou restaurant before Pirates of the Caribbean, with the wonderful atmosphere. And have you been that? Yeah,
Yeah,
obviously you have.
just that little part before you get to the actual ride, that is the actual ride, but before you get to the entrance, you're passing that restaurant and all that,
Yeah.
with the little man rocking in the chair. That area right there is very inspirational to me, writer-wise.
Well, my housemate lived in Los Angeles for a number of years. He lived in Redondo Beach, and he constantly talks about that and New Orleans Square and the Blue Bayou restaurant and how inspiring the Pirates ride out there is. Not to say that this one in Disney World is not inspiring, but it's different. And he's been to both. So he's like, yeah, Disneyland, I don't know. I think I have to give them a better score. And of course, Disney World, when they did Epcot, they copied that in the Mexico Pavilion with El Rio del Tiempo, which is now, I don't know, it used to be called El Rio del Tiempo, which is the Rivers of Time, but now it's the Three Caballeros thing. And
Oh,
what's
okay.
interesting, yeah, and what's interesting about that ride actually is it's very heavily modeled on the original If You Had Wings. So if you had Wings fans, if you missed that ride, go do the new Three Caballeros ride in Mexico Pavilion. It's not quite the same as El Rio del Tiempo, which was very history focused, but you'll still see some of that same technology. So,
Oh, I can't say enough stuff about Disney.
I know. We just,
Not at
well, see,
all.
that's a problem with us. It's like Disney fans. We could talk all night.
Absolutely. And then you put paranormal stuff in with it, you're all done.
Yeah,
You won't shut
exactly.
me up.
Yeah, so how many times have you been? Now, you've been to Disneyland many times or a few times or
Disneyland mostly, yeah. I'm gonna say that maybe it's, let's see, I'll be 40 blah blah pretty soon.
yeah. We're all 40 blah blah at this point.
Oh, heck, I'll cop to it. I'll be 47 in the on the 15th.
Well, happy
I'm
birthday.
thank you. I'm gonna say I've been there at least as many times as my age because we would go there several times a year when I was younger, and then I don't know, about three, four times to Disney World. So Disneyland holds a lot. Oh, this is a very big space in my heart because of family memories, but also being psychic and medium, going to a place like that with crowds can be very interesting.
I completely agree. Yeah, You gotta shut yourself down. Otherwise, you hear everybody's white noise.
Oh my
you can't
gosh.
Enjoy yourself. Yeah, it's totally true. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, it's very... Now, I'm curious, what do you think about the new expansions you guys are getting out there? I mean, you're getting them sooner than... Since I'm on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
You are definitely getting them sooner than I'm getting them here. Like the Little Mermaid ride out there, I believe, is just about to open for you guys. But
I
for us,
so.
It's not until 2013.
Yeah, I know that's we've got that going on. Well, I'm in Nevada, but there's that, and then the opening. It's any time now. I can't remember exactly when for the new Star Tours.
Yes, and the new Star Tours for us is almost open. I think. I'm not sure. I'm actually. Have you ever heard of Inside the Magic?
I have.
Okay. They do a lot of stuff. Actually, Nathan does a Living with Disney segment for Ricky, but he's been really keeping on top of that. But I've been so busy literally in the last 4 months, I haven't even had time for that. Like I'm like backed up by 4 months, but Ricky's pretty cool. And he has pictures on there of what's going on because he's a real Star Wars fan. So mm-hmm. he's been following what the progress is, but I'm not sure if ours opens before yours or if your new one is already open.
I don't know. I usually go to, oh my goodness, I can't think of it. Come on, Dawn. Vision's Fantastic.
Oh yeah. That's a really great, I've been a lurker on there for a long time. I actually joined, but I just read it. I don't know. I don't comment often just because I don't know. I feel like somebody's going to say, oh, you're stupid. So I never go on there. But I really enjoy all the fans on there because they really have a lot of valuable information. And that's another good one, too. There's that one. There's Window of the Magic. I mean, my God, I could spend all day.
Oh,
on Disney
I know.
Forums. It's ridiculous. I mean, if you were a member of every fan thing, you just... You know, you would have no life.
Like, no, it's true. It's very true.
It's very true. So, so you're in Nevada now, or did you grow up in California?
I was born and raised in California for most of my life.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm a California girl. Love Disneyland, love the beach, and I'm in the desert.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the middle of the woods, and having spent so much time in Daytona Beach growing up, I kind of feel starved.
Oh, I know.
We have Long Island Sound. Yay.
Oh. But I like to make the best of where I am, and I can make my own happiness. I found out I'm fairly good at that, so it's all good. I've got Uber. I've got you now as a new friend, and everything's wonderful, right?
I know. I'm so excited. We are definitely going to have to talk more.
Absolutely. Now, you've got a bunch of short fictions here that have been published all over the place. Citizen Culture, Newitch Magazine, Spilt Milk. Can you talk to me about some of that stuff?
Sure. Most of those short stories are dark. When I did my website, I actually had to divide them into three groups just because... I actually have fans, which kind of shocks me sometimes. But, yeah, I do have fans. Some of them like ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them like the darker relationship stories. And some of them like, you know, creature feature or creepier type stories or stuff with a little bit of gore. I'm not a huge fan of gore. I don't write very much gore. And when I do, I try to be subtle, but that's just my personal preference. So I had to divide them. So I have a lot of short fiction on my website that if you're into any kind of dark stuff, you can head over to my website and go to my Read My Work page. My website is www.christypetersen.com. And you can read a bunch, click on that, and you can read a bunch of stuff for free. I've always believed in making my stories as free as possible for most people. And in fact, there are three published stories from Skeletons in the Swimming Hole available on that page that you can read. and decide if that's the book you want to buy. Right. You know, decide if it's for you, especially if you're a Disney fan. Go check it out. They're complete. You know, if you don't enjoy them, fine. You don't have to get the book, you know. And it will be out on Kindle soon. But yeah, so.
Okay.
And a lot of that stuff that's up there now that's posted. And what's sad is that in the early days of the internet, I was publishing a lot of stuff electronically before it was cool. Do you know what I mean? As far as the writing community is concerned, before it was cool and before it was acceptable, if that makes any sense.
You were groundbreaking, girl.
Well, I was just jumping on everybody else's bandwagon that didn't care.
whatever works.
And whatever works. But the nice thing is that, I mean, there's one of my stories in a magazine called Afternoon, and it's called The Single Sparrow, and it was a very early short story of mine, very early. You know, 1997 or 1998, in terms of my current growth now, you know, I mean, I was writing stories since I was a kid, but in terms of that story, it's still online. And Afternoon, to their credit, they were online in 1999. Wow. When there were so few of these. And of course, now in the last year, we've gotten the explosion of Kindle and ebooks and all this stuff. And it's almost to the point where print, unless you're POD, is truly becoming obsolete. Mm-hmm. It'll never disappear, but it's becoming a less the way to do things. Does that make sense?
It does.
Oh, look, you don't. Yeah, because 10 years ago, you know, even in 2001, oh, you're an electronic publication? Oh, that doesn't count. Really?
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I remember getting drunk on my back porch with some other writers and saying, trust me, in 10 years, this won't make a difference. And I guess I was right. So,
that's awesome.
I didn't believe my own, you know, prediction back then because I had been drinking a lot. But I do remember the night I said it. And, you know, I was like, yeah, it was June of 2001. I said, 10 years, this won't make a difference. So
you crack me up.
I don't know. I guess I was just ballsy that night or something.
Yeah, you know what? You gotta be. You gotta be sometimes. Well, we're gonna take a little bit of a break, play a little music, and we'll be right back with Miss Christy Peterson-Stanover.
Hey, glad you could join us.
Why just lay back and relax?
Come get comfy and enjoy the music.
Loosen up them trousers.
UberRadioNetwork.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Moulin Rouge. Where's all my soul sisters? Let me hear your flow, sisters.
Hey, sister, go, sister, soul, sister, flow, sister. Oh.
Let them know we bout that cake straight out the gate. We looking to women, some mistakes for whores. I'm saying, why spend mine when I can spend yours? Disagree? Well, that's you, and I'm sorry. I'ma keep playing these cats out like a car. High heel shoes, getting love from the dudes. Four badass chicks from the Moulin Rouge.
Hey, sisters, soul sisters. Better get that dough, sisters.
drink wine with diamonds in a glass by the case, the meaning of expensive taste.
You wanna hinchy, ya-ya, come on, mocha chocolata.
What?
Yo, lady, mama. Ooh.
Christina, Pink, Lil Kim,
hey,
Maya, Rottweiler, baby, Moulin Rouge, Mr. Mina, yeah.
Here, this is Dawn, this is PM Lights, and I'm here with Ms. Christy Peterson, shown over. Hey, kiddo, you still with me, right?
Of course I am, and I love that song.
That's a jam, isn't it?
Oh, God. I the last time I heard that song, I went to the University of Rhode Island in the early 90s, and I used to go partying in Newport all the time, and that was, I don't know, over the years, I always went there 3 or 4 times a year after that, so I don't remember the actual time frame, but I remember dancing to that in a lot of clubs. So,
right on.
That brought back a lot of nice memories. Bring it on. You know?
Oh, you gotta love the music. Hey,
yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah, it is. That's my therapy.
Yeah.
It's my therapy, absolutely. Now, you're the recipient of 2 Norman Mailer Writers, Colony Writers Residencies. Could you tell me a little bit about that, girl?
Yes. Norman Mailer had a house in Provincetown, which is a beautiful, beautiful home. And, well, it looks very different now from when it did. But if anybody is a fan of Provincetown, Massachusetts, or a fan of Norman Mailer, you should definitely check out the one of the films that he did. I think it was actually his one and only. Don't quote me on that, but it might have been. Because I know he was kind of involved in film. His true love was film. His true love was writing, but he really wanted to be a film producer. He did a film called Tough Guys Don't Dance, which was based on his book, which was filmed in Provincetown, in his house. When he passed away in 2007, Lawrence Schiller, Norman Mailer's wife, Norris Church Mailer, decided that it needed to be a writer's colony. So they really have worked on that. And I applied in the summer of 2007 for their fellowships, because they have a fellowship every summer, which is full paid, and poets and very talented poets and writers get to go there. They have some wonderful instructors, some wonderful residents. Marita Golden is one of them. For those of you who, you know, are literary and you know, are on the, you know, are familiar with her work. Sigrid Nunez is another. They had just have wonderful, wonderful, talented people that teach these things. And you go up for a month in the summer and you live there. Well, shortly after that, they started a fall, winter, spring residency program. And I said, well, I didn't get into the summer one because they had so many applicants and there were just so many talented people. So I applied and I got in. So I went up for winter 2010. I stayed for 2 weeks and they offered me a month on top of that while I was there. Wow. So I got to stay until the fourth week and it's beautiful. They give you an apartment. You have access to Norman's home. You know, oh, it's amazing. I can't even describe that experience. It's just the most inspiring place. It's beautiful. It's his home, his books, his furniture. It's all still there. It's dusted. It's cared for. They made some small modifications like his private library where he used to play poker.
Uh-huh.
And Norman was very down to earth. He really loved the people in that very small town. So, you know, he just hung out with everyone, you know. Norris Church Mailer writes about that in her book, A Ticket to the Circus, which came out last year. Now, of course, she passed away last year, too. And in fact, the condo where he lived in Brooklyn, where she also lived out the last years of her life, is now on sale. For I think $2.5 million, but it's amazing. The New York Times has a wonderful story about that. But he loved Provincetown, you know, and he truly was a family man, but he loved his writing. He loved film. And the first time I laid eyes on Provincetown, I understood why Norman Mailer loved it. It's an intoxicating place. And it you know what, honestly, I go there in winter two Januaries in a row now I've been there. This past January, I was there for 2 weeks. It's so inspiring. It's mind-blowing. And in a lot of ways, it turns your world upside down. You come home, or at least for me, I come home and it takes me 6 weeks to readjust to real life. Yeah, it's such a, but the risk is worth it. It's so incredible. I write so much stuff when I'm there. And there's nothing like, in the whole world, going to Norman's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and knowing you're sitting on his patio furniture having a glass of wine.
Man.
With the ocean. In the middle of winter. And you're sitting there and it's not that cold. Yeah, the wind is pretty bad there.
Right.
But, you know, compared to where I live in Connecticut, now you live in Nevada, mm-hmm. and you grew up in California, and I don't know if you're northern or southern, but I do know that here, I'm inland Connecticut, it gets pretty cold and pretty snowy and pretty nasty, and I've always been an ocean girl, and out there, the winters are tame. They're totally tame. It's like, yeah, I remember one night I was talking to a friend of mine, and it was like 6 o'clock at night, and I'm sitting on Norman's back porch, and I'm in nothing but a sweater. This is like, you know, yeah. It's amazing. It's so beautiful. So they have really turned the colony. They've also expanded their offerings to international tours where they invite people to, tour writers' homes in other countries. It's a wonderful thing. If there's anyone out there who's a writer, I encourage you to just Google Norman Mailer's Writers Colony. Norman Mailer Writers Colony. Just Google that.
Okay.
The website will come up because that's the top thing that comes up. I don't want to give the website because it's like nmwc.org or something like that, but I don't want to give the wrong website. Just Google that. You'll find it. Look for their summer programs. Look for their winter accommodations, their fall, their spring, their winter. It's a wonderful program, and it's a magical place. And being in the home, you're surrounded by Norman's books.
That's intense.
I mean, oh my God, all his family pictures, all the stuff is still there.
That's crazy.
There's nothing more powerful than that. I am so prolific there, it's disgusting. I don't even sleep while I'm there. It's like literally I'm going to bed at 1 and then getting up at 5 and being like, all right. I'm not all right. It's just, I can't even stay away from it. And I've been lucky enough to have been accepted twice for the winter programs. Lucky enough to have been accepted twice for the workshops in the summer. And it's such a different animal. You know, you go there in the summer, it's totally different from the winter. But,
sure.
But they're wonderful in both respects. So that's what Norman Mailer Writers Colony is about. So if anyone's interested, definitely do it. It's worth, you know, they offer partial scholarships. They offer full scholarships. So just check it out.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's incredible. You can't match the power. You really can't. You know how to express it. It's in a lot of ways for a serious writer, it's better than Disney World.
Oh.
Yeah, you pour wine, you're drinking out of his glasses. You're like, oh, my God.
You know? Ding.
Yeah, totally. Ding.
That's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, our time is almost up here, but got a little bit of time here. If you could tell me a little bit about the editing you do for Read Short Fiction.
Yeah, sure. Read Short Fiction is actually the brainchild of one of my very dear childhood friends, Robert Mayette. And he's a wonderful writer. He's a wonderful editor. He's actually pursuing, I want to say it's an MBA right now at Babson College in Boston. But he's a serious genius. Like, he really knows what he's doing in terms of business. And yeah, he's really good. He's one of those rare people that's really good at the creative end of writing, but is also seriously great at the business end. He just gets it both. He approached me one day and said, I want to start this magazine called Read Short Fiction because I'm really tired of people telling me short fiction's dead, because now we have, you know, Twitter and we have blogs and things and Flash and Hint Fiction, all these short things. And he goes, what do you think? Are you willing to help me? And I said, absolutely. So he and I have been working on that. And the whole premise is that we try to reach people who are not writers. Writers with the stories that we select. For example, we don't pay. However, we spend $50 in Facebook ads. And we put the writer's name, and we target it to people who are not writers, basically. That, hey, are you interested in the Civil War? You'd like this short story. Because we're trying to get it out to the general public.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It reaches so many people, though, that you wouldn't normally reach.
Exactly. That's the whole point. And that, you know, one of the whole things that my dad, because my dad was a short story guy, too. You know, and one of the interesting things he used to say to me all the time when I was a kid was he used to say that reading is a way of getting in touch with ourselves and, you know, and understanding ourselves. And he said, if you're a short story writer, if you write a poem or, you know, if you write a novel even, and you reach one person and you change that person's life, because you make them think differently about something.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, then you've done your job. It doesn't matter if you're famous, like Stephen King, because I was really into Stephen King when I was a kid, and he was always talking to me about that. He goes, Chrissy, you don't have to be famous. You have to reach one person.
Right.
And I honestly have to tell you, sometimes I get email from people, like from a blog post I'll write, and they're like, you helped me so much today. And that's when I say, okay.
Wow.
That's it. That's all you need. Because it's too easy to get caught up in the selling and the Kindle and the blogging and the Twitter and let's go on Facebook. I mean, that's the culture today. And you deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I get one email from even if it's a person I've known for 20 years. And they say, Chrissy, I got that. I'm like, okay, I did my job. I don't need anything else.
That's right. That's the core of it all.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's hard to remember. I'll guarantee that. It's really hard. But it does. That's part of the magic of it. So, yeah.
That's good stuff. Well, I can't thank you enough for being on here with me. Would love more than anything to have you back so we can talk some more. I'm sure all these guys, I'm getting good reactions. They just love you to death.
Well, thank you. No, I can't wait to talk to you some more. And I have another Disney book, like I said, coming out at the latest 2013, I promise. But I have a horror novel coming out, too, at the end of this year. So by Vagabondage Press, actually. They bought my first horror novel, Bad Apple.
The Bad Apple.
So that'll be out soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to come back and talk to us about that. We're going to have
that'll be fun.
What's that, honey?
That would be fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun with you tonight, and I can't thank you enough. I'll make sure I have you back. We're going to wrap it up, PM Lights Live tonight. I want you guys to hang tight, because later on tonight, my girl Sequeria is going to have Club Sequeria later on. She rocks the house. This girl is awesome. She's my girl. Can't say enough good stuff about her. I want to thank everybody in the chat room. You guys rock. Everybody that's listening, I can't thank you enough. Join me next week, same time, Uber Radio Network. I will have my next guest is Willie Windwalker Gibson. And I will...